The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Luke. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So Jesus told them a parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of your property that will belong to me." So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare, but here I am dying of hunger? I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.'" So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound." Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." The Gospel of the Lord.
May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Please be seated. The parable of the prodigal son. This has been a valuable lesson in looking at what the readings are before I sign up to preach. It's a little daunting of a task to take this story that's so familiar, that has resonated with so many since it was written down. Yeah, it's one of those stories that's just so familiar. It gets referenced and told time and time again. It's been enshrined in works of art, in literature, in so many different ways. And at first I thought, well, how am I going to give a new take on it? This story that's been referred to as the heart of the gospel, sitting right in the middle of the gospel of Luke, telling the story of what it means to be a disciple, what it means to follow Christ, what it means to believe in a God who is a God of love. I mean, this is a story of love, of weakness. It's a story of the desire for independence and the hope of redemption. It's a story of coming home, grounded in the reality that we all fall away, we all make mistakes, we all get lost, yet there's always hope on the other side, that if we let ourselves, we can all be found. And this story reminds us of the times of despair and loneliness and how temporary they are, that joy is always possible, that reconciliation and the hope of it is real, and that God's invitation to us is always open. And so I was sitting with this thinking, well, what am I going to do with this? There's so much here. And as I was talking with a divinity school classmate earlier in the week, who's a recent combat veteran, who's had his share of struggles since getting back, I mentioned to him that I was going to be preaching on this parable. After I told him what I was thinking about and where I wanted to go with it, he just turned to me and said, you know, I've always really liked that one. Really connect to the son. It was clear in his voice. This parable spoke to him and has spoken to him at different times when he needed that message. That message of acceptance, of being able to come home, of being welcomed back regardless of situation or circumstance. And in that moment, I realized how powerful this story is, how central to our faith, that in so many ways it speaks for itself. And I think he's not alone in drawing comfort from it. I know I've been there, those moments of feeling distant, estranged, lost to the world, really needing to be reminded that there's someone out there, there's something out there, that love is real, that love is shown by God, is shown through other people. The love, like the fathers in the stories, is actually possible, that it does happen. And those moments come at different points. They can come from a moment of close connection to God, or from a spouse, a child, a parent, a close friend, or they can come in unexpected ways, from a distant old friend reaching out, a coworker to taking a couple extra minutes to ask, how are you really doing? We are graced to have these unexpected moments of God's love breaking into our lives. And the story brings us to that. It invites us in. It invites us to step into the shoes of the Son. As my friend reminded me, there's something so comforting to that. Reminding us that we aren't alone, that we aren't the only ones searching, that no matter how far we have gone astray, God will welcome us back. In some ways, it would be fine to stop there, to stay in that place of the prodigal son who has wasted his substance and riotous living, but come back home to a father's love. But there's so much more in this story. And so I want us to consider it from a couple different perspectives, to look at the parable again, not only from the perspective of that younger son, but to put ourselves in the place of the father, to put ourselves in the place of that older brother. And through that, to think about the story of reconciliation it tells, what it speaks to us here and now about what it takes for relationships to be repaired, for wholeness and healing to happen. Well, the parable has been called the parable of the prodigal son since early in Christianity, by back to the 3rd or the 4th century. Others have given it different names. I think the story could just as easily be called the parable of the loving father, because it's the father's love freely and lavishly given that stands at the center of it. Everything points towards the love and that response in love. And let's think about the father. His younger son has done everything he could to disgrace, to push away, to rebel against his father. He asked for his inheritance early, essentially saying, I want nothing to do with you. He moved to another country. He He's rejected family, homeland, even his religious heritage. And he's left his father sitting there not knowing whether his son was alive or dead, thriving or destitute. But all the while, the father waited. I can just imagine him sitting at the window or just outside the front door, looking out over the desert landscape, watching the road creep off the horizon, hoping that one day he'll see a figure coming down that road, that one day he'll see the son that he loved even enough to let him go, to see him coming back. The father shows no signs of anger or bitterness. Doesn't mean that he didn't feel those feelings, but more than anything else, he just longed to see his son again. And then that day, sitting in front of the house, catching that first glimpse of a figure coming out from the desert, gaunt, dirty, and shoeless, worn down by an arduous journey, there wasn't a moment's hesitation. He did something that no father of that time would do. He ran out to meet his son on the road. As a respectable patriarch and member of the community, as a landowner of considerable means, he likely spent most of his life having people come to him. But for him to become overcome by joy in that way is truly remarkable, unexpected, countercultural. He didn't care about what the neighbors would think. He acted out of the compassion and love that was stirred up in him. And he doesn't only go out to welcome his son back, he does so lavishly. He invites his son not to become like one of the servants, as his son asks, but celebrates over him, rejoices over having his son back. Put the best robe on him, put a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet, kill the fatted calf, set out a feast, come and rejoice, my son has returned. The father's magnanimity sounds over the top to even to us. I can only imagine what it would have been like to the early Christians who were hearing this story. It would have seemed revolutionary. It was unspeakable. By all expectations, the father shouldn't even be acknowledging the son, much less welcoming him back in with such grace. This moment of the embrace shows the father's character, the joy, the compassion, the acceptance, the forgiveness, all of which are valued over honor, over judgment, over any kind of righteous anger. But I think that may not even be the most powerful moment in this story. Let's think about what happens after that. As the party is in full swing and the father realizes that something's missing. He realized he was missing his other son, the faithful son, the beloved son, who had been with him all along, and for whom he thought this moment of rejoicing should belong to just as much as him. But when he invites the younger, older son in, he rejects the father's invitation and lashes out. And the father is once again subjected to the same kind of shame that he went through with his younger son. But once again, the father doesn't accept that hurt and indignation, but he acts out of love. He keeps the invitation to his older son open. Come, eat, drink, rejoice. The father embodies so much of what we see as these ideals of Christian virtue, in a way that can seem a little lofty. But I think what we're getting from this parable is that this is something real, this is something attainable for all of us. That we all have the capacity to meet anger and jealousy and to respond to it with joy, to accept the estranged son back, but also to love the vengeful older brother. To engage all of it with an attitude of love, of hospitality, and joy. This is the same kind of love that God shows for each of us, always there, always ready to take us in, always ready, eager for us to be restored and to be renewed in relationship with God. Then there's another side to this, that of the older son. I think it's too easy to see him as the villain of the story, to push him away as being vindictive and jealous, to cast him aside as the other, the foil of vice contrasting the father's virtue. There's been a lot of interpretation throughout Christian history to support that, that sees the father as the scribes and the Pharisees, as rigid and legalistic, always opposing God and refusing to accept others. But to see the parable in this way only limits it and misses a key element in the story. I think that's that we are all the older brother. Just as we are the younger son and the father, we are all capable of what the older brother did, of acting as he acted, of responding as he responded. And part of the parable's power is in just how human each of these characters are. So I think that if each of us thought about it, it wouldn't take long to see in ourselves a reaction like the brother's. You know, whether it's seeing a classmate praised for a paper they spent half as much time on as me, or getting passed up when a promotion goes to a coworker we know hasn't been putting in the work, or any time that praise, recognition, we feel should go to us, any time we need to feel appreciated, when that goes to another. All of these are times when the brother's reaction seems much more real, much more tangible. It's not so foreign. Yeah, I know, speaking for me, I don't want to speak for anyone else, that I have that capacity for jealousy, for contempt, for spite. I'm not very good at holding grudges, but when it comes down to it, it's not hard to react the way the brother did. It's just part of being human. And Jesus realizes this. I mean, that's what's at work at this parable and in so many of the parables. Yeah, but there's also this element that the parable isn't conclusive, that the door isn't shut on him for the way he reacted, but opened even wider. The story ends with an invitation for the older brother to work through the anger, through the jealousy, and to accept the invite in, to accept the chance to celebrate, to rejoice in the love of his father and the restoration of a family. Similarly, I think God is constantly inviting us in, desiring us, for us to desire God. So I think we can't view this as a story of us versus them. It's not the good father and the repentant son against the evil older brother. If we really look at each of these characters, we can see part of ourselves in them and part of them in ourselves. That we are capable of an incredible range of emotions and actions. The younger son's yearning for independence, his search for meaning in all the wrong places, his loneliness and despair when things don't go the way he hoped, his willingness to be humble and seek forgiveness, and ultimately to accept the love and restoration of a relationship with his father. And then there's the father, his willingness to put those he loves before himself, his radical welcome and hospitality, the joy he feels over the restoration of that relationship, his ability to forgive the son. And these are all things that we can aspire to and all things that we are capable of. We also need to be aware of the older brother within us. Our tendencies towards resentment, distrust, bitterness, jealousy, whatever it may be. But to know that as we work through that, that we all also have that love in us, that we are all this kind of rich tapestry of all these different ways of reacting, of engaging, and that God loves us through it all. That we're offered to put all of it up to God, to give all of it over to him, and to seek to be transformed into that figure of love, of welcome, of acceptance. And as we work to see each of these characters in ourselves, I think we also need to work to see them in others. That no person is just one thing. Looking at the state of the world, country and the world today, it's easy to forget that. It's always much easier to be the righteous one, to have the right opinions, the right politics, the right standing on every issue, and for the other person to be the one who's jealous, angry, hateful. But that's not completely true. We are all full selves. We are all incredibly complex. And forgetting that tends to flatten personalities, tends to deny others their full humanity, to reduce the world, to reduce just how complicated it is to be human. And so I think we all need to just pay attention to the way that both sides characterize the other. We need to pay attention to the tendency to villainize, the tendency to set up easy us versus them language that paints one side as unequivocally good and the other as unequivocally bad. Remember that we're all human. We're all limited. We are all complex and complicated. We're all doing the best we can. But our personality cannot be reduced to one thing. And when we recognize this about ourselves and others, it forms an essential first step if we can find any common ground and start any conversation across lines of difference. We all share in one humanity. We all go astray, we all fall short. We also all have the capacity to humble ourselves and see the world through the eyes of another, to see the wrongs that we've done, our own faults and flaws, but also to see the capacity for good in others and in ourselves, the capacity to love and to be loved. And so no matter who we are and which character is being played out in us most in this moment, whether it's the prodigal son, the loving father, or the hurting brother, this parable reminds us that we are called into one house with one another. God's invitation is always open to share in one humanity and to share in one love. Ours is a God who invites us to and wants to offer us everything. And he wants us to offer all of our brokenness, our pains, our jealousies, to be transformed by his love. The invitation to enter into God's house is open to all, to rejoice and to be glad, however far we may wander, however difficult it may be. God's love is big enough and wide enough to embrace all of who we are.